Accession number 11105, Colonel M. McBain, final reel 25.
Colonel M. McBain, reel 25. Where did you go to after that, Colonel?
From Rendsburg, I was posted as second in command to the 1st Battalion, the Light Infantry. Because, of course, in 1968, when I was in absent in Holland, the amalgamation of the various Light Infantry regiments had taken place. And so, as I say, I went from Rendsburg to Northern Ireland, to Ballykinmer, to join the 1st Battalion of Light Infantry as 2nd in command, which sounded fine. I had asked for somewhere in the United Kingdom, because I'd never really, funnily enough, apart from 2 years of the TA, never actually been in the UK. And I suppose Northern Ireland is part of the UK, but it's about as far away as you can get. However, off we went. And we went to Ballykinmer, where we took over what was the best army house we'd ever had. It had just been refurbished. It was a pre-war house. It had just been refurbished. And we could look out of our bedroom window and see the mountains of Mourne sweeping down to the sea. And of course, this was 1969, all was peace and quiet in Northern Ireland. And really, the battalion had come, from Gibraltar, I think. They were looking forward to a nice, peaceful couple of years in Northern Ireland. Ballykinmer, like so many places, is a good officer station, but no good for soldiers or their families. It's miles from anyway. However, as it turned out, that really wasn't going to make a lot of difference. The big excitement when I arrived was the battalion had been allocated a 6-week exercise in Kenya, and so I took that on as my job to organise that. And then very soon after that, things started to happen in Northern Ireland. The first thing was blowing up water pipes and water works and things like that. And so we had to start producing guards and patrols on all these things. it was fairly clear that situation was was deteriorating. Largely, sadly, I mean, it's a sad country, and without getting carried away too much. When we went there, it was quite clear that reconciliation, if that's the right word, the two communities were getting together, certainly the younger people and so on. And I think without putting too fine a point on it, the unionist politicians didn't like this because they could see their power going. It was a very good, to start with, as usual, most of these things are good, very good civil liberties movement going, and that was a cross-community, cross-society movement. Everyone, there were a lot of very good people in it, and that had the unionists running scared. And as I mean, when all these pipes started getting blown up and waterworks and so on, the immediate reaction, of course, was everyone was saying it was the IRA. I mean, it's been subsequently proved, of course, it wasn't the IRA, it was the Protestants, it was the whatever they call themselves. Anyway, it doesn't matter, that was going on. And so our trip to to Kenya, it looked more and more remote. However, I went out and did the recce and had a super time out there for 10 days, sculling around Kenya on my own. Came back, and the situation in Northern Ireland wasn't getting any better, and I carried on planning. And then, literally a fortnight, I suppose, before we were due to go, someone assassinated, see, the deputy president of Kenya. And so, well, that's it. I mean, they're not going to let us go now, but no, they went on. And a battalion was coming across from Colchester to sit in while we were away. And away we went. Off we went to Kenya. And as the last aeroplane landed, this battalion that had come from Colchester went onto the streets in Londonderry. We did our 6-7 weeks in Kenya, came back, and then went straight onto the streets in Belfast. And the sad thing from my point of view really was that very soon in Belfast, I think purely coincidental, there were all three battalions, regular battalions of the Light Infantry, and a Green Jacket battalion. And the difficult thing for myself and for a whole lot of others, when the DLI had broken up, which had been the fourth battalion of the Light Infantry for a very short time, they were spread throughout the other battalions, and quite a number went into the Green Jackets. Well, now, and they were all back together in Belfast, and so when you went prowling around Belfast in the dead of night, as one tended to do, you'd go around a street corner, there'd be a bunch of soldiers, and I mean, they were DLI. But in fact, they weren't, of course. They were in some Light Infantry battalion, or indeed in the Green Jacket battalion. And that was very odd. I came round a corner one evening, and there was the bugle major. And I forget now which battalion he was in, but there was bugle major Armstrong, one DLI, but he wasn't. He was bugle major somebody somewhere else. And that was a bit sad. However, we all got on with it. And then in due time, because the battalion had been in Ballykinder for about a year or so, just over a year when I joined it. So after a year, it was scheduled to move, and we were posted to Lemgo in Germany.
Did you hit any particularly nasty incidents in Northern Ireland while you were there?
Well,
where you lost people?
No, we didn't have any. No, we didn't have any casualties, because in fact, when we were there, and up to the time we left, it was not in the state that it's in at the moment. It was far more of a more usual internal security problem with mobs and riots and petrol bombs and barricades and so on. Although, when we were out one evening, Saturday night's a great night for rioting in Belfast. Well, it's a great night for rioting in a lot of places, but Belfast in particular. And it was one Saturday night, in fact, when I was... The battalion had given a company to the 3rd Battalion, who were there, who were doing some great operation to prevent, to stop Catholics getting at Protestants, or vice versa. No, it was trying to stop Protestants getting at Catholics. And they were strung across main roads and so on, literally shoulder to shoulder. And that was the night the first bullets were fired at the army. By somebody. Nobody was hurt, but that was the night that happened. When we were there, it was just the desperate Irish situation. As an Irishman said one evening to me, it's been going off 400 years, this, and it's not going to change. And of course, to an outsider, and we are outsiders, there's no doubt about it, whatever the people might say, it's almost incomprehensible. You see, what the people in Northern Ireland didn't realise, and when I say Northern Ireland, that's being a bit broad, that's a bit too wide a spectrum, because the people we were dealing with were Belfast and Londonderry, basically, the Victorian ghetto, not a pleasant place at all. And and when we first went onto the streets, it was to protect the Catholics and the Protestants. And then it changed at some stage. But of course, what the people in Belfast of either side, either persuasion, couldn't appreciate was that to the average British soldier, they were no different to the Chinese in Hong Kong, or the Arabs in Aden, or the Malays in Singapore. They were wogs. I mean, they were not British people. British people didn't behave like that, and they couldn't relate this lot, who were manning barricades and throwing petrol bombs and so on. They couldn't relate. They're not the same people that live in our street at home. And so, if a soldier had to arrest someone or move them on or bash them about a bit, the fact that didn't cross Geordie's mind, because British people didn't behave like that. And that, I don't think that has sunk in yet, because of course no politician will stand up and say that. But I'm sure that is the case. So it was a hard time. It was a very difficult time, because the army was really not doing the job that it was designed to do. Because when it really started, the Ulster Cantabury disintegrated, you see, and disappeared. And so the army was acting as police force, where it's not designed to do that. So we were all quite glad when the time came to move on to Lemgo in BAR. And again, for my part, that was the first time I'd gone to BAR with a battalion. I'd been in BAR doing an office job, and I'd never been with a battalion. And also, a battalion equipped with armoured personnel carriers, the great old 432. So we had all that training to do. We had to train all the drivers and before we left the country. And when we got there, we had to take them all over and retrain and so on. So there's quite a lot to do. And that was interesting. And it was really, I went out unaccompanied, my wife stayed at home, because again, I only had a year to do with the battalion, and then I was at that stage where it was all a bit, the army had changed since I joined in 1950, and really there were a number of factors that at that time made me decide to leave the army. Varying factors. My regiment had disappeared. I could see the army becoming a very narrow existence, shuffling between BAOR, United Kingdom, and Northern Ireland. And I didn't want to do that. I'd had a very good, happy 20 years in the army. And so the various factors decided me to leave, and so when I'd done my year in Lemgo, second in command, finished off there, I'd applied for a civilian job from Lemgo and had come home, been interviewed a couple of times, and so got that job. And so I was comparatively lucky, well, in fact, very lucky. I came straight out of the army into a civilian job. And that is the end of the tale, I think, really. Other than a five-year adventure with the Territorial Army a couple of years after I'd left the regular army, which I enjoyed. And that's it, really. That finishes it.